Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Each Thursday this month, we've talked about flying in the airline industry with the New York Times airline industry correspondent, Jad Mawad. We've talked about the increasingly terrible passenger experience, the state of airport security, and today in our final installment, the future of the industry, including news out today about the end of those deceptive teaser fares. Jad, welcome back for one last time. And this has been so much fun. Thanks again for doing this series with us.
Good morning, Brian. I'm really enjoying this. I'm getting used to it.
Just in time to leave, unfortunately. But let's talk about the news out today first. Airlines will no longer be able to hit you up for all kinds of fees and taxes after they've lured you in with low teaser rates. Explain the teaser rates.
Well, this is typically something, that the low-cost carriers would do, $59 trips between, any two cities you can think of on Southwest or Spirit or other low-cost airlines. That's a teaser rate because what that does not take into account are, government taxes, airport taxes, et cetera. And what the new rule that comes into effect this week says is that effectively airlines have to be more upfront about the final cost to passengers.
And if it's just taxes and fees, you think it's going to be some money here, some money there. Annoying, but not that much. But I've read one example of a teaser fare for a transatlantic flight being advertised for as little as $150 that ultimately, after the taxes and the fees, ended up closer to $800.
Right. The international flights would be those where you would see the largest discrepancy because this is where the international airport taxes are the highest and also where the airlines have the higher fuel surcharges. So on that kind of example, yeah, you could definitely see those kind of discrepancies. On domestic flights, you could easily, end up paying double your, the price that is advertised.
There are other new passenger rights that take effect today, right?
There's a bunch of them. One of them is extending to international flights the prohibition of keeping passengers on the tarmac for 4 hours. Domestically, there's a three-hour limit before planes have to come back to the gate. International flights now have to come back if they are held on the tarmac for more than 4 hours and allow passengers the opportunity to get off. There's a bunch of them. The one about the fee, the ticket prices is really the one that you're going to see the most.
Also, passengers will have the ability now to hold a reservation without payment or cancel one with a full refund within 24 hours of making the reservation, as long as it's made at least a week before the departure date. And I think most of the airlines do that voluntarily anyway. I know I've run into that option. But now they'll be required to allow you to make a reservation and not pay for 24 hours or cancel one that you've paid for within 24 hours after you've made it.
Right. I mean, it's a thin line. Some airlines would allowed you to do that. Some would have charged you to do that. It goes into the whole basket of the new fees and revenue streams that the industry has been looking for. Some airlines I've seen now will let you make a booking and hold that reservation for, for $10 or something or such for 24 hours. So just to be able to hold a reservation, they found that they could charge for that. This sort of clarifies some of the rules. It doesn't address all the fees, obviously, but it goes a little way into providing a little bit more transparency in the pricing system for the airlines.
I know as we talk about the future of the airline industry, that your main point is that the future of the airline industry is largely in international carriers, not in the American companies. Do these rules apply just to the U.S. airlines or also to foreign carriers?
I believe they apply to carriers that fly into the U.S. or operate in the U.S.
So if they operate in the U.S.,
correct,
they would apply. Is the future of the airline industry going to be centered in the Middle East and Asia, in your opinion?
Well, that's certainly where the growth is, and that's certainly where, you know, it's the airline industry is so correlated to economic growth that wherever you have economic growth and expansion, airlines are doing well. And so this is obviously happening in Asia, in the Middle East to a certain extent, in Latin America, where airlines are doing extremely well, including U.S. airlines, who are actually adding capacity, adding flights to Latin America, where they've been cutting back everywhere else.
Why?
Well, you know, Brazil, Chile, Argentina, these are economies that are growing. People want to go there, do business there. So I was reading this morning, or yesterday rather, Delta has been cutting capacity to Europe by 10% in the past quarter, but they've increased, that is the number of seats they fly, whereas they've increased capacity to Latin America by something like 5% in the past quarter. So these are big numbers and big shifts that reflect essentially where people want to fly.
So if the future of the airline industry is in carriers based in the Middle East and Asia, are we going to be flying from Cleveland to Chicago on El Al or Air Dubai?
No. There is a future for domestic carriers. There will be fewer domestic carriers, I think. I think the consolidation trend is not going to end. U.S. Airways yesterday said that it was interested in acquiring or looking at the possibility of acquiring American Airlines, which is currently in bankruptcy. United and Continental obviously have merged, and the Continental brand will soon disappear. Delta and Northwest merged a few years ago. I think we'll end up with, you know, three or four major American carriers. And for them, the game is going to be, you know, can they raise revenue faster than oil and energy prices are going up? And whichever way they can find how to do so, you know, will be critical to their success.
And what about the Asian airlines? What are the major players? What advantages do they have in the international market? Is there going to be some push by Chinese airlines into more of the global airline global market?
Yes, so you're seeing that. Chinese airlines are still a little bit behind the globalization trend. Although some airlines in Asia have been kind of at the forefront, so to speak, you know, airlines like Singapore Airlines or Cathay Pacific, Asiana, and Korean Airlines. I mean, these are, you know, major carriers, and the reasons of their success vary. Some of them are state-owned or state-backed, and that gives them, you know, financial leverage that others don't have. Others operate, you know, entirely you know, in the free market and entirely based on their own balance sheet. Same goes for Middle East carriers. Some of them are state-owned, like Qatar Airways, and some, like Emirates, are state-owned but don't get, that is based in Dubai, but don't get any state subsidies.
Where does the future of fuel costs fit into the rise of these Middle Eastern airlines? They're obviously based, mm-hmm, a number of them, in oil-rich nations. Do they have a leg up because of that?
To some extent, they do. I mean, they buy jet fuel at the price that jet fuel is sold in Dubai, and it's obviously sold cheaper in Dubai than in the U.S., but not all that cheaper. They're not getting it for free by any stretch of the imagination. I think high fuel costs are impacting airlines throughout the board, wherever they may be based. I think for some of those airlines that are based in the Middle East, they're getting their cost differential comes from cheaper labor, cheaper you know, ground staff, cheaper airport fees, because the owner of the Dubai airport is the same holding group that owns the airline. They also get cheaper wages, give cheaper wages to their flight attendants. So that's where their cost advantage really kicks in, and that's what's made them so successful.
As we start to wrap up and wind down this series, I think one of the takeaways for me in terms of the passenger experience today and the likely future of the passenger experience is that you think the airlines are really focusing on improving the experience for the business and first class passengers. They're making the seats nicer and other amenities better. But does that mean things are going to be worse for us regular coach passengers? Is travel going to be more and more reserve for elite passengers in terms of anything that's comfortable?
I mean, yes and no. Obviously, for the airlines, the premium travelers, first class and business class, although there may be, 30% or so of their seats account for something like 70% of their revenue. So obviously, the airlines are going to put the latest and the best and the most comfortable of everything you can think of for those passengers, particularly on international destinations where they can charge premium fares. For coach, though, yes, the experience is not going to get better, I don't think, but you're getting, marginal improvements. Now I think the standard for having some form of in-flight entertainment is becoming more and more widespread in coach. Airlines are adding Wi-Fi to their planes throughout the fleet, and that includes coach seats as well. They stopped a while ago giving you free meals in coach, and that's probably not such a bad thing. But now they're offering you for a price, better food on board. So I think flights are going to still be full. I think there will be very few middle seats to be had for elbow room. So that part is not going to get any better. But in some ways, there's probably a little bit of a silver lining that some of the developments and innovations that are made in the front kind of trickle down.
And that's so where we have to leave it. With Jad Mouad, airline industry correspondent for the New York Times, it's been a great series. Thank you so much for coming on with us every Thursday all this month.
Thanks for having me, Brian.